72-68. Jalen Williams inbound to Tony, ahead of the pack. Tony to the basket. He'll slam it down with 1 second left. The Arkansas Razorbacks are going back to the Elite Eight. Salas will inbound into Nembhard. There's the horn. It's over. Number one is done. Arkansas storms from eight down to win it. They knock out the top seed Gonzaga. 74-68, the final score.
And Houston's going to bleed some clock here. 1:33 and counting left to go. Shedd dribbling inside half court. Comes to Edwards, right side. Big three, got it! Dagger shot with 1:24 left to go. Back to a nine-point game as Edwards hits again from downtown.
And there you have it. There you have it. Two number one seeds go down. Jason said Gonzaga was his favorite to win it all. Yeah. I said Arizona. Maybe that Dynast guy might know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
I won't go that far because KU hasn't even played the Sweet 16 game quite yet. So
there's the question. Are you going to root for Kansas more?
Why? Oh, okay.
Or for Dusty to be wrong, because you don't want that hanging over your head.
No, forever. I want Dusty to be right.
Okay,
I want him to be right. All right. There's not
a person that heard what I said that is a crimson and blue person that's going to say they don't want me to be bragging about this when they actually go and do it. Right, like KU fans all want.
Yeah.
To be right.
I mean, there's that thing. Sometimes you just want your friend to be wrong because it's nice that they're wrong every once in a while.
I have experienced that before. Probably people cheering against my predictions just so they could say you're wrong. Sure. I think that happens with anybody that's a sports talk show person. But in this case, if it's involving a team that I cheer for and it somehow ends up, I'll be more than happy to bow down and say, Dusty, you were right. and I know Dusty deep down hopes he's wrong. by the way, isn't that weird?
Yeah.
One of the things you'll learn about me, Jason, too, is like I'm not one, like if I get something right, and I think Wade would back me up on this, like I'm not one that's like thumping my chest about it because it's just like I know that I've been wrong a lot of times.
Right.
So I don't hold that over people's heads.
Yeah.
If I somehow hit once out of 70 tries.
I'm the same way in regards to holding over people's heads and friends of mine. But on this show, I like to point out when we're way wrong.
Yeah.
But I also like to point out when we're spot on.
Yeah.
And there was one time this happened, and it was KUK State game. And we predicted scores, and I predicted the exact score. And it ended up being it. 59-55, I remember it.
Yeah.
KU beat K-State 59-55. So I thumped my chest a little bit because I'm like, that'll never happen in the rest of my life to nail that score identical. And what happened was Elijah Johnson had two free throws. And I remember going 59-55. I'm like, man, if they just don't foul here, I can brag tomorrow on the show. And then they fouled Elijah Johnson. And I'm like, oh, darn it. There goes that. I was so close.
Yeah.
And then that was one of the few times I didn't cheer for a KU guy to make anything. He missed both. I'm like, whoa, should I play the lottery or what?
There's times you got to gloat about it. I mean, I didn't do the 59-55 thing like you did, but like 3 hours before the national championship in women's basketball that one year, I said UConn 73, Syracuse 52.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I want to say.
The final score was UConn 73, Syracuse 52. So I bragged about that, right? Like you got to take those when you nail it
on
the head.
You have to.
Wade got a little lucky with Creighton losing. I would have been insufferable for just. Just for it being the first week that I was here, like I would have been insufferable for a little while. But yeah,
it is weird the first day you're here. We're talking about your team losing to one of my favorite teams.
That's, probably that's, be insufferable for a while.
Yeah,
anyway, but,
yeah. Trust
that's
me,
the way it goes.
The one thing that's really it's great, but it's really bad about the NCAA tournament is, and I noticed this as I get older. I watch a team celebrate a big win, and then 48 hours later, they're tears and they're crying.
Yeah.
Because it's just the highest of highs, and it's the lowest of lows. You know, like when St. Peter's wins against, I think the underdogs, there's not as many tears because, you know, you weren't expected.
Yeah.
But when you look at, Arizona and Gonzaga, number one seeds. And I mean, Arizona is a great example, to be quite honest with you. They were beaten if there was a call made at the end of the regulation. They hit a three to tie at 12 seconds ago against TCU. And they should have probably been out of this tournament. And they found a way to win. There's a euphoria of that. And that was on Sunday.
Yeah.
And then turn around and play Thursday. And they lose. And Houston controlled the game. You know, it's interesting that there's been talk about this at times, and I think it is a little confusing that we talk about this with a few other teams in the first weekend, like with the first four, and like Indiana went from Dayton all the way to the West Coast in a short period of time, and then they got blown out. Is that, you know, Kansas played on Saturday, and they on in the second round. Now they play Friday, so Kansas has 6 days in between games, more time to prepare, more time to rest up. Whereas Arizona played Sunday night. Pretty sure it was Sunday night. And then they played the last night.
Yeah.
So they only had 3 days in between games, and they're a higher seed than Kansas on the actual bracket. And they had a Sunday turnaround to a Thursday. And what I don't understand is, like, some of these teams, even in the same region, there's an extra day of rest for some of these teams, and sometimes it's the teams that aren't the one seed. To me, everything should be built around giving the one seed the advantage.
Yeah.
And Arizona and Houston, I have to see when they played, if they played Saturday or Sunday. I'm not sure, but it's possible. Let me see here. I'm going to go back. Houston played on Sunday, and Arizona played on Sunday. They both played on Sunday.
I knew Arizona was the last game Sunday night that got finished.
Okay, so they both played Sunday. But let's see here. Kansas and Providence, they both played. But let's see. Miami of Florida
played Sunday, and Iowa
State. Where's Miami of Florida here?
You just scroll past.
There we go. Right there. Okay, so there's an example. So Miami of Florida and Iowa State, they played on Sunday. They have one less day than Kansas and Providence, but they're in the same region. So then Kansas and Providence turn around and play, or Kansas Providence winner will play the winner of Miami of Florida and Iowa State.
Yeah.
Kansas really, what happened? You got an extra day of rest in between. You know, there's one day in between the Sweet 16 and Elite 8, don't get me wrong. But, you know, it is interesting how that works, because you think they could set it up to where you have the whole region is set the same day.
Yeah,
you know?
The problem is
the sites.
When they changed to the pods, right?
Yes.
Like, because it used to be that way.
Right.
It used to be the West and South would play this day, the Midwest and East would play this day, right?
And you'd see all the teams in your bracket, and you could scout them and sit in the stands.
Like, if this is for the regional, for the first and second rounds, these are the sites, and for the regionals, these are the sites. Mm-hmm. This is where you're going, and this is the day you're playing.
Mm-hmm.
But with San Francisco, they changed to that pod system where they're trying to reward those top 16 teams, right?
Right.
And get them in a spot that is conducive for them and for their fans, instead of having Duke in the West and then having to play their first and second round games like Sacramento, and then their regional games in Las Vegas or something, you know?
Right.
It's like, you know, you gotta adjust those dates to where you don't want to. I mean, you don't have one pot of games one day in Fort Worth, and then the next set of games, first round games the next day. So that's why they do that like that, and that's what kind of messed that part of it up. And I think I don't know if I was a coach, I would rather have let's play Thursday, Saturday, and Thursday, Saturday next week. Right?
Yeah, and see, that's what's weird to me too, is because
but
you could have
you
that.
You also want to help your fans out.
You can go each of the weeks. You can be less time. Like if. It's a little bit complicated to try to explain over the radio right now, but there are times where you go from, you know, well, I just explained it. Arizona went from Sunday to Thursday. Kansas goes from Saturday to Friday. Why isn't Arizona going, if they're playing Sunday and Kansas plays Saturday, why didn't Kansas play last night and Arizona play tonight?
Yeah.
And that would be equal amount of time.
Yeah.
That's the part I tried to figure out, and I don't understand it fully.
Yeah, and it's just...
Oh well, it's not amazing.
It all comes back to that pod.
It does.
The way they schedule the games.
It does. All right. Before we jump into the Sweet 16 last night, we'll preview KU. We'll hear from Ed Cooley, head coach of Providence, and of course Bill Self as well. Local sports. And Jerome Tang, new head coach of K State. We'll hear from him and Gene Taylor. Plus, we got more on Tyreek Hill, the trade, and what the Chiefs are doing already to replace him. And there's Chiefs got some interesting guys that are coming in for visits. We'll fill you in on. And Bobby Witt Jr. continues to turn heads in spring training, but Dusty's got local sports first.
Yeah, the NPL held the powerlifting meet yesterday in Wilson. The Northern Plains League did, so a lot of great finishes there. Lincoln won team championships on both sides. The girls had 277 ahead of second place Sylvan Lucas with 101 points, and then the Lincoln boys finished with 344 points. Thunder Ridge was second at 315. Individual gold medalists for Lincoln girls, Kylie Hull at 114, 123 Alex Biggs, 132 Reagan Stewart, 145 55, Dawson O'Bannon, and 165, Emily Hole, again, all from Lincoln. And then power weight class went to Mariana Escobar from Thunder Ridge. On the boys' side, from Lincoln at 123, Brayson Young, 132, Aiden Rosado, Hiram Pauly at 140, Josh Zuzik's at 148, and Caleb Dotter at 156, Justice White of Rock Hills first at 165, Ian Christina Blakeside at 173, and then from Thunder Ridge, or actually Kale Marcus of Pike Valley at 181, and then Thunder Ridge had three MPL champions at 198, Dylan Bice, Josh Ferguson at 220, and in the power weight class, Leland McGuire. So again, congratulations to all those athletes. There are a lot of athletes that participated and placed very high on that list, and you can find the full results at ncksports.com. Also, Concordia baseball team opened their season yesterday, swept by Riley County, 12-6 and 17-10. The Concordia-Riley County softball games were postponed because the field conditions were not good at Concordia softball fields. So those were postponed. Again, full schedules for all your favorite spring sports teams, your favorite schools, all their spring sports schedules are posted at ncksports.com if you're interested on finding out when and where your favorite high school teams will be playing. Some of them starting next week. A lot of them, they're in that first week of April as well.
All right, we'll have some previews of spring sports coming up. I know Dusty and Jason are working on that. Sweet 16 last night, of course, we covered Arkansas beat Gonzaga 74-68, and it was also Arizona losing to Houston 72-60, so two ones are gone. And then, of course, Baylor was a one, lost to North Carolina in overtime, so KU the last one seed still standing. Michigan lost to Villanova last night, 63-55. Villanova is a scary team to me. I think that's a team you don't want to play. Mm-hmm. They just find they're just a winning program. They grind it out. They play a slower pace. This version of his team, Gillespie's a stud. They got leadership on the floor. They're going to be a tough out. Houston and Villanova, first team to 50 wins.
Yeah,
that's going to be a drag it out fight right there
for sure. I think Jay Wright's one of the best, too.
He is.
Just whatever his personnel is,
he adjusts to it.
He's going
to
run, and Bill Self is that way, too, I feel like. But he's had a lot of different styles.
Jay Wright's had more success in the tournament than Bill Self has in regards to winning titles and Final Fours. Duke beat Texas Tech last night. A lot of people just thought Texas Tech was going to win and Duke was going to be done and Coach K would be done. And then you look in Gonzaga, they figure, well, Duke ain't going to be Gonzaga and Texas Tech. Well, now they don't have to. And so now Duke is going to get Arkansas. This is opening up perfectly for Duke, and I can't stand it. Of course, Duke fans are probably going, I can't stand it. Kansas, theirs is opening up because now Kansas don't have to worry about Arizona in the Final Four. Could we be on a collision course, Duke-Kansas, for the national championship? You know, it's funny, we were having Brian Haney, the voice of Jayhawks, on last Thursday and also yesterday, and we were talking about the strengths of the seeds. And I said, you know, I think in Kansas' region, the 2, 3, and 4 seeds are the weakest of all the regions, and the 5 seeds the toughest in Iowa. And then, of course, Iowa got beat first round. And Brian goes, well, you know, I think Duke is the worst of the twos. Now Duke's in the Elite Eight, and they're gaining steam, and they're gaining momentum, they're gaining confidence, and now I think they caught a big break with Gonzaga losing. So I don't want to see Coach K in the Final Four. I don't want to see, because all it'll be is about Coach K. You know, it's ridiculous to me when you're watching a close game and they're cutting to him and his wife holding hands walking into the arena. We've got a really close basketball game over here between two Power 5 conference teams, a Big 12 battle, if I remember it was. And why do we need to see Coach K walking in with his wife holding her hand? I mean, who cares? Well, we got to show him bowing his head and meditating on the sideline. Who cares? Like, and I don't understand why people would pay tons of money to go watch his final game and Duke. He doesn't play. I mean, and he's not a guy that's going to, you know, do something like throw a chair like Bobby Knight and make it really entertaining. So I don't understand why people spend a whole bunch of money doing that. But that's their money. That's their time. Like, whatever. But you think it's bad already with the focus on Coach K. It's his last game against Carolina. It's his last ACC regular season game. It's his last game at home for Duke. It's his last ACC tournament game. It's his last – every game now could be his last NCAA tournament game. It's like enough already. What are we going to do now? Is this Coach K's last national championship game? Of course it is. It's the last game of the year. Is this his last Final Four? Of course it is. It's unless he decides to pull a Tom Brady and unretire. I'm honestly already sick of it. But the thing is, the longer Duke goes, it's just going to get worse and worse and worse. And I always get – there's two things that pleases me about the NCAA tournament bracket every – well, not every year. There's two things that please me overall. If my favorite team makes it, that's super awesome. And my second thing that makes my day or makes me feel better is when Duke is out. And that's a major compliment to Duke. That tells you how good a program they are. And Coach K, probably the best college basketball coach in the history of men's basketball. People will say John Wooden. You could throw him in there, too. I respect what Coach K has done, but I just don't like Duke. Never have. And I don't want them to win. And I just think now you look at everything here, and in the bottom half, you've got UCLA, Carolina, Purdue or St. Peter's. I mean, Duke's got a clear path. I'm not say clear path. UCLA would be a tough out. They've lost to Carolina, but if they play them again, I think they'd win. And Purdue, I think Duke would find a way to win. I think the one that Duke would be have the biggest problem with would be UCLA. I just think everything is opening up perfectly for Duke to make it all the way to the national championship game. And the way things are going right now, they probably will face like a 5 seed. And then it might be Houston or maybe Villanova, a 2. But it could be Kansas. But the way ones are going right now, Kansas better hold their breath.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm going to say it. Duke is the favorite to win it all now. Oh, no. Kiss of death, baby. I'm doing that on purpose.
Put that up for you. Yeah. Arkansas is not chopped liver. I mean,
I know that. They just beat Gonzaga. You can't say that. I mean, that's obvious.
I mean, that's going to be a battle for them. And so,
Every game will be a battle, no matter what, from here on out.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is Duke.
But they're in the right position.
Would you rather play Arkansas or Gonzaga if you're Duke? You'd rather play Arkansas.
Probably Arkansas, yeah.
Clearly. Yeah. I mean, if you're Kansas, who would you rather play? Would you rather have played. You know, would you rather play Auburn or Iowa State or Miami, Florida? Well, clearly you'd rather play the other, but that doesn't mean the team that they're going to play can't beat them.
Yeah.
You know?
And that doesn't mean the team that they would rather play isn't actually hotter than the team that they wouldn't rather play now.
True. But once again, it comes down to matchups.
Exactly.
And Duke and Gonzaga had a heck of a game early in the year, and Duke actually beat Gonzaga.
Yeah.
I didn't think they'd beat them a second time, so I also like that thing too. I'll cheer for Arkansas against Duke. I'll cheer against anybody against Duke. I just don't want to. I'm Coach K's wonderful career. Let's finish it as soon as we can. That's the way I look at it. So you can stick with who's the favorite to win it all. Now you're saying KU. That's what you said the other day, which you look pretty smart right now. Although let's be honest, KU hasn't played since you made that prediction.
We're still in the same round.
We are.
Last night was. So
you are.
I'm not. You know, I say by default KU as a number one seed. If you're looking at it like that, would be the favorite because they're the only one seed left.
Right.
But again, they have not played this round yet, so I got to wait until that's over before they actually become that team for me anyway.
So I give the kiss of death. I hope to Duke as the favorite now to win it all. It's lining up perfectly for Coach K and his final rendezvous. Jason Broadfoot now will go ahead and try to find another team to jinx. Who's the favorite to win it all now? If you say Kansas, you can just take your little butt and go right out that door.
I'm going to jinx Villanova.
Villanova, you think's the favorite now?
Well, I don't know. I just...
Well, none of us know, let's be honest.
But I think you hit on it. Villanova, they just find a way. They don't always look the greatest in January, but... They'll figure it out by February, hit their stride in March, and I just think they're, I like UCLA too, but,
So Villanova's your favorite right now.
Yeah.
If you had to pick a champion right now, you pick Villanova. I'll say Duke, and you said Kansas.
Let's go Peacocks. That's who I'm cheering for.
I'm going with St. Peter's over Purdue. St. Peter's go all the way.
Yeah.
First 15 seed to make a Final Four.
Just win it all, St. Peter's.
Has a 15 seed made the Elite Eight?
No. It was Oral Roberts almost
was
last
very
year.
Close.
That was going to be the first one.
Florida Gulf Coast made it to the Sweet 16.
Arkansas, just three of them made it to the Sweet 16. None of them won that
okay.
next game.
So St. Peter's would do something nobody's ever done before tonight if they can win. St. Peter's and Purdue, I think it's possible. 6-0-9, Purdue all the pressure, and Purdue has flamed out in the tournament many times when they're the better team. Of course, Providence, KU, more on that in a moment. North Carolina, UCLA tonight, 8:39 on CBS. Iowa State, Miami of Florida at 8:59. Of all these games, the one I think that is the easiest to pick, and here's the kiss of death, I think the easiest one to pick tonight is Miami winning. And that sounds weird. That's the closest seed line of all of them. I think Miami winning or Iowa State, I feel super confident about that. And so Iowa State will move on to the Elite Eight, where they will take on Providence. More than likely. But I don't see Iowa State beating Miami, Florida. I don't. But I didn't think
the little parts that I've seen Miami play, it doesn't seem like a
likely
great matchup for Iowa State.
But. Yeah. I didn't think Gonzaga would lose last night either. So it is what it is. Providence KU tonight, pregame 5:30 on ZNI 6.3 Lake. Tip-off 6:30 from Chicago. A lot of talk about KU, of course, as a one seed. A lot of talk about other teams in this tournament are still standing. St. Peter's a Cinderella. Coach K's final rendezvous through the tournament. One seeds are losing, so forth and so on. Houston's getting a lot of love, and rightfully so. Kelvin Sampson, what he's done there without two of his best players. But very quietly under the radar is Providence. And that worries me.
Yeah.
And Providence has played this whole, got a chip on their shoulder, nobody respects us, nobody knows much of us, they don't think we're that great. Villanova gets credit. We won the Big East. We were better than Villanova this year. They're a four seed who went out and simply took care of business the first two rounds of this tournament, blew out Richmond in the second round. They're not getting a lot of street cred.
Uh-huh.
Here is Ed Cooley on the opportunity against the Jayhawks.
It's great for our school. And again, they are the blue blood. I know they're a win away from the all-time wins in the history of our game, and they've earned that. Coach Self is a Hall of Fame coach, great players, great staff. It's a challenge, a great challenge that we are prepared for. But an opportunity to play against a number one seed, you know, it's just something that, you know, just stuff that you dream about. And we're living that dream and hopefully continue to dream it big.
Keys for Kansas tonight, according to Matt Tate, who is covering the Jayhawks there in Chicago. And the number one key, he says, is win the three-point line. You know, that's what happens in the NCAA tournament. All it takes is one team to be hot, and you're out of this tournament. And Brian Haney brought it up yesterday. There's a stat that Kansas has had five teams make like 10 or more threes in a tournament game against them. And all the other Blue Bloods combined have five, and KU has five themselves. Now, I think there's two ways of looking at that. You can say unfortunate. You know, bad luck for KU. Teams that don't shoot the ball very well, like Creighton, all of a sudden go off and 12 for 26. Northern Iowa, you know, I remember that game. VCU, yeah. Whatever. I could also say maybe that isn't a fluke when it happens so many times. Maybe Kansas isn't very good at defending three-point line. Maybe Bill Self hasn't figured out how to have a good enough defense to defend the three-point line in tournament games. I'm not saying that's correct. I'm just throwing it out there, because why is Kansas have that happen to them so much more than anybody else? You know, I think it can happen, you know, a few more times. That could be just bad luck. But why so many more times? You have to start, and I'm sure Bill Self has looked at this, dissected this, to say, why is it that teams have some of their best nights of the year against our defense? And we're talking over a decade of games in the NCAA tournament. Creighton only shot 30% from three on the year, and they went off against Kansas. Creighton shoots 35%, which is above the average nationally. They were 20 of 44 from beyond the arc in the first two tournament games, 46%. So on paper, you'd say, well, dear goodness gracious, Providence, if Creighton can go 12 of 26, what's Providence going to do against this KU defense? Bill Self concerned about the three-point line. That's important tonight.
For us, we have to have great switches. You got to switch to take something away rather than let them catch and then react. And then the other thing, you can't allow – they're going to make threes, but you would rather get them off the bounce, force them to get them off the bounce and off the catch. So, you know, be there on the catch where there's very, very short closeouts, if any.
Providence is a pretty decent defensive team. Here's Bill on their Friar defense.
They're big. You know, when they've got Durham out there at the point – that's probably as big a group as we played against this year. That would put them, I could be off a little bit, but basically 6'4", 6'6", 6'7", 6'8", in the backcourt. So that's a long team. They have good quickness.
And I mentioned earlier about how Providence feels a little bit disrespected. Yourself on Providence playing with a chip on their shoulder.
They're not a team from our perspective, or I think anyone else's perspective now, that gets no respect. They've gotten respect and they've earned it all. And I had one guy tell me that there's some deal out there, a lucky team. Media has kind of pegged them as that because they won so many close games. And luck doesn't win close games. Toughness and skill and execution does. And so they got a lot to be proud of. And I know they're going into this game believing that if they play well, they can handle us. And we know that we're going to have to play well to do that to them.
Yeah, it's interesting, the close game thing. I agree with them. That isn't luck. You might win, you might get lucky and win a close game, but when you win a lot of close games, that's not luck. You know, the Chiefs, remember, had 10 straight games where they were like 9-1 in that stretch, or 10 in a row, or 10-0, where they won every game by less than 7 points. And people are talking about how, what's wrong with the Chiefs? It's like, no, they know how to make plays when it really, really matters at the very end. And that's a sign of a great team, winning close games. We talked about throughout the year, KU at one point was 6-1 in games decided by 5 points or less in Big 12 play. Yeah. And Bruce Weber in K-State was like 3-7.
Yeah.
Well, there's a difference between a guy resigning and a guy, you know, going to be just fine and probably get another big extension.
Big 12 championship or share of it at least this year.
And maybe a national title.
Yeah.
So there's no luck involved per se with that. And I'll go back to Ohio State 1 year in football. I remember Skip Bayless. There's no way Ohio State's going to beat Miami of Florida. Blah, 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 blah. There's no way. And then he was whining about a call that went against Miami of Florida at the end of the game that helped Ohio State. It's like, wait a minute. You said there'd be, what do you mean, close? So why are you complaining about a call? But Ohio State, that was a team that just found a way to win close games all year long, all the way to a national title.
It was an aggravating team in that way.
They were.
Like, it's like, can somebody just beat these guys? Because they're just not, you just don't feel like they're that good, right?
But they weren't lucky.
Providence still has that. That's actually a pretty similar comparison, mm-hmm. I would say. Mm-hmm. Providence isn't as well known as Ohio State football is, obviously, but
right.
a team that had, you know, not gotten probably the respect that they deserve, but like you say, you win close games, you're a good team.
Yes, absolutely.
All you have to do is find that opposite. Find a team that you said 6-1 or whatever it was. Find the one that goes 1-6.
Yeah, right.
And then watch the ends of games that they play in, and watch the ends of games that the team that goes 6-1, you know, there's a difference.
Well, it's pretty easy.
Always a difference.
Today was this year was easy.
Yeah.
Just put on the tape and watch KU in the final minute of a close game, and then Bruce Weber and Marquise Noel decide to dribble out the clock and chuck it from a Cyclone logo. Yeah. I mean, that doesn't happen to KU. So, and then I can go back to 2012. That KU team was not that talented offensively.
Yeah.
They had, you know, Thomas Robinson was a good player, Jeff Withia, shot blocker, Tyshawn Taylor, Elijah Johnson, and they skirted by. Every game in the tournament was super close, should have lost a couple of times, made it all the way to the national championship game. Should have never beat Ohio State in the Final Four. I know I was there. Ohio State controlled the whole game, but KU made plays and got stops when they really needed to and won those close games, and that team made it to the national championship, and that team wasn't even close to as good overall as many other teams Bill Self has had that flamed out. However, that team, what did they do? They played defense, and they had a shot blocker. And that's something that Bill Self's talked about when you get to the tournament. You know, offense is nice and all, but really ugliness is better. And what he means by that is he says, I'm not really worried about how great we play. It's about making sure the other team plays worse, which that really, it sounds weird to say that, but it makes some sense because if you're playing your average game, okay, that doesn't mean you lose automatically. For some teams, it does. But if you can make the other team play below average, you play a C game offensively, but if the other team plays C minus offensively, you're going to win.
Yeah.
And so you muddy it up and you win ugly. And that's one of the reasons why I have a hard time buying into the KU Jayhawk Kool-Aid, because I've watched every game this year. I know what Kansas does inside and out. And Kansas is not nearly as good defensively as the teams that KU has had that's made a Final Four under Bill Self. This team, I mean, we saw it against Creighton, for crying out loud. And part of the reason they're not as good defensively is, well, one, they don't guard on the perimeter as well, lockdown-wise, in my opinion. But they have no real shot blocker. And you look back to Kansas in 08, what they had. They had guys that could block shots. You had Cole Aldrich, who came off the bench, you know, but they had size. Sasha Kahn could block shots. Darrell Arthur could block shots. Okay, they had guys that could protect the rim. 2012, they had Jeff Withy.
Yeah.
2018, they had Udoka Azubuike. There's a common theme in what they had when they made it to the Final Four the previous three times with Bill Self. They don't have a rim protector. McCormick did get a key block against Creighton. I get that. But McCormick's not a shot blocker. He doesn't play above the rim. Shot blockers play above the rim. Kansas doesn't have that. And so I think the biggest thing that holds me back from going as far as you say that Kansas is your favorite to win it all is that I can't buy in that McCormick's going to play good enough all the way through here to do that.
And that's what it hinges on for me. Mm-hmm. Everything that I have said about Kansas absolutely hinges on David McCormick not being a superstar, right? He doesn't have to be that every game, but being consistent every game.
Right. He can't have a game where he gets two fouls and hardly plays and is missing layups and ineffective. Yeah. He can't do that in his tournament from now on out.
Not at all.
Yeah. And the thing is, you look at his career, With the exception of the stretch, the second half of last year, he hasn't been consistent.
Yeah.
And he hasn't been this year.
Yeah. No, not at all.
So, and then transition. If KU can get out in transition and score some easy buckets, that'll be big, too. So, the Sweet 16, KU-Providence tonight on Z96.3 Lake. Let's shift to Kansas State men's basketball, where they introduced their 25th men's basketball coach of program history yesterday afternoon. Jerome Tang officially greeted K-State fans at a press conference at Bramlage Coliseum. You probably know his backstory by now. He was assistant coach at Baylor for 19 years. He's 55 years of age. Gene Taylor, athletic director of K-State, on finding Jerome Tang.
We met Jerome at Kansas City, and we met him for an hour. And I didn't really know who he was personally. I'd heard of him. He was identified early in the process as somebody we really wanted to talk to. And I will tell you, after that first hour, we're like, okay, the bar has been set pretty high. And whoever we talk to after this is going to really have to try to match that bar. And we talked to some great candidates, all head coaches. And every time we kept coming back to Jerome and kept coming back, hey, we got to find out more about who he is as a person. And we went to his home in Waco this past Sunday. And, you know, sometimes you think, oh, I'll be there for an hour. 3 hours later, we basically had to leave because at some point they had to have dinner as a family. But it was just a fit, and you felt it.
More on Tang here in a moment in regards to hearing from him. Here is Taylor on what Tang was able to accomplish as Scott Drew's right-hand man.
His fingerprints are all over the Baylor program. And of those of you that follow college basketball, you understand what they took over and what they had to do to build the program that it became. And his fingerprints are all over it. And we found our guy. We found our guy that fit all those characteristics, that's going to be able to lead us to sustained success at a high level, which is everybody expects here. The players expect it. The fans expect it. We expect it. The support staff expect it. And that's why all the people are here, because you have that much care about this program. And he's feeling it from the day he got here.
Okay, so Jerome Tang introduced his new head coach at Kansas State University. Listen, he was very impressive in his press conference. And I'm not trying to bring up bad memories. I'm not trying to rain on anybody's parade here. Ron Prince was awesome as well. And it's a honeymoon period with any new coach. Most end up knocking out of the park in their introductory press conference. If they don't, then you probably got a problem. Now, I'll say Charlie Weiss didn't exactly knock it out of the park at KU in football, but we knew that before he even got on the podium. Having said that, I think this is a terrific hire for K-State. I'm all sold on it. I believe that Jerome Tang will not be Ron Prince 2.0 at Kansas State University. Yeah. So let's hear from Jerome Tang. And first of all, on the fans at Kansas State. And this is very clear to me. And I will say, I think K-State does a wonderful job. They might be one of the best schools in the Big 12, and maybe across the country, in promoting their new guys to their fan base through social media and so many other ways. Mm-hmm. You know, Kleiman was terrific. I love the video showing when he flew in and saw the little apple from his window seat. That made you feel like you're a part of it.
Jerome Tang actually mentioned that yesterday. I don't have the cut because it wasn't long enough, but he was like, I wish Emily could have got that shot through the window like she did with Coach Kleiman. He's like, it was too overcast and hazy. We couldn't get it. But so obviously that's something he
had seen,
knew about and had seen
while he was at Baylor
and wanted to do.
Which that really proves what K-State's been doing. And you see lots of stuff social media with Jerome Tang. They're promoting him. But the biggest thing that you saw with Chris Kleiman, and you also have seen it, of course, now with Jerome Tang, reaching out to the fan base.
Yep. Let's not get this, like, twisted. This is not about me, right? This is about y'all. This is about y'all, right? The success of this program will depend on you and the players that we bring in. Okay? It's about players. And so we have to get players. And the way you get players and you get them here and you get is that you have great fans. Because kids want to play in front of great fans and in great communities, and that's what attracted me to this place. I was always blown away by the fans and the community and the energy, and just extremely, extremely thankful for that.
Of course, when you hire a new head coach, you expect your new coach to take you to a different level, to improve your team that you cheer for. You expect more. Tang says it won't take long to find success at Kansas State University in men's basketball.
This is an unbelievable blessing. I've lived a blessed life, but this is just the start. of some really, really big things that's going to happen. And with everyone's help, with all the K-State family, Wildcat Nation, we're going to accomplish great things together. And it's not going to take long. It is not going to take long. I didn't come to rebuild, right? Came to elevate.
If you're a fan, you got to love that last line.
Absolutely.
I thought that was really well played word-wise. Having said that, coaches come in with lots of bluster. Yeah. I know Scott Frost did at Nebraska. He even alienated some other Big Ten coaches.
It was the...
Cocky.
Yeah, it was the question of how are you going to adjust to the Big Ten? And then Scott turns it around and says, Big Ten has to adjust to us. And our fan base ate it up. Like, you know, because it's not just one thing to play and win games. We have to do it this tough way with, like, fullbacks and tight ends. Mm-hmm. Or it just isn't the same. So when they heard that tough talk like that, you know, just expectations through the moon that minute. And, you know, probably to his detriment. He didn't get that grace period of just getting a little bit better than the year before and then getting a little bit better than the year before that. So he had to win right away, and he didn't, and it's just gotten worse and worse.
Right.
And so now he's in a hole, and he had to change the whole way of doing things, going digging into the transfer portal and all that stuff.
But he got the fan base excited with a comment like that, that then basically was them versus the rest of the Big Ten with that comment, which came across as cocky and arrogant. And when I heard it, I liked it myself. I was like, well, this guy's got confidence. And who could argue? He had so much success, undefeated at Central Florida. But the Big Ten's different than where he was at Central Florida. And so I think now you can go back, and if Jerome Tang ends up having a lot of success early on, you'll go back and K-State will run that cut over and over and over and over and over. However, if he ends up doing what a Scott Frost does or a Ron Prince does, where you have some success here and there, but it's really inconsistent, but they're going to run back to this line and go, he's a really good salesman.
Kansas will run that clip over and over. Texas Tech will run that clip over and over and over. Now it's Ohio State runs Scott Frost clips over and over and over. It's just depends on
that's a good
who
point.
You want to play that clip.
It's quite the line. Yeah. There's no doubt about that. It gets your attention. He's very articulate. I love his energy. It's his first head coaching job, so sometimes you're maybe over the top energetically initially, and then you got to settle into the job, which that's okay. Here's Tang talking about how hard work breeds confidence.
It's not about on the day if you're making shots or not making shots. You got to trust your work. When you put in the work, you can go out there and play confidently. And the reason I'm here is because I work hard. That, you know, my parents are immigrants. I'm an immigrant. You know, nobody handed us anything. And we just outwork people. And when you outwork people, they either make excuses about why they're losing to you, or they, you know, they got to give you credit. And we're going to get credit because we're going to be able to step out on the court and trust the work that we put in.
Well, I'd say technically we're all immigrants, really. I mean, there were people here before us. I still think it's hilarious that Columbus discovered America and there were already people here. So somebody else already discovered it, but whatever. That's a topic for another day. But no, I get his point, of course. He said all the right things yesterday. There's no doubt about it. And when Chris Klieman was hired at K-State, win the dang day, you know, is kind of the motto. And you're like, man, I can't wait to go play football for that guy. Well, now, how many years now has Klieman been the head coach?
He's going into his fourth, right?
Okay.
His fifth.
Okay. And we already have K-State fans this past year when they started 0-3 in the Big 12 and played the three best teams in the Big 12 that they wanted him fired. So the honeymoon period can be extremely short. For some of you listening, you might have already been married three times. You already know that. Maybe the honeymoon period lasted one day. Maybe it lasted a year. Maybe it lasted 2 months, 2 weeks. But eventually, the honeymoon period does end, no matter who you are.
Yeah. I mean, unless the shirts now say win the Tang Day. I don't know if anybody's seen those.
That's so corny. Corny.
The only way the honeymoon period doesn't end is if he comes in here and goes 32-6 and wins a title, or maybe even the Final Four, right?
Like,
That's the only way the honeymoon period doesn't end very, very quickly. But again, eventually, even if you do have a good season, mm-hmm. keep winning in 1 year, and then the next year doesn't go that the right way, then the honeymoon period at that point is officially
odds over. Are there going to be the ups and the downs? We've seen that with Chris Kleiman.
I got a question that you guys probably answer a little bit better than I would right now. He says he doesn't want it to take long to show improvement. Mm-hmm. Is there really that much of a difference right now? And now take away the two wins in, say, the tournament. But, like, Iowa State kind of fits somewhere in the middle of the Big 12. Mm-hmm. Is there a lot of difference from where K-State is to where Iowa State is?
I think that's an excellent question. Yeah. And this is something somebody pointed out. Iowa State was 2-22 last year. They hired a new coach, and they're in the Sweet 16. If Iowa State can do that, K-State wasn't 2-22 this year.
No.
We know they lost a lot of close games. They're much better than that Iowa State team a year ago. And you can retain Noel, you retain Pack to where they come back. That's two major guys to build around that had a pretty good years. And, of course, you know he's going to bring in talent. You know they're going to be transferred and so forth and so on. I think the Iowa State comparison is interesting. To me, Iowa State wasn't much better than K-State this year anyway. It's just that they won some close games. K-State didn't and got off to a hot start in non-conference play. And I think that's interesting you bring it up, Jason, because to me, there's no reason why K-State can't go, you know, what's Iowa State's record right now? I don't know what it is. But Iowa State is, they were, what were they? They had a losing record in the Big 12.
Yeah, absolutely.
I do know that. Let me see if I can pull it up. If
they were like 5-9 in the Big 12 at one point.
Actually, I think the record is next to them here.
22-12 overall.
They're 22-12 overall. So they've won two in the tournament. So they were 20-12, and they lost in the quarterfinals of the Big 12 tournament. So they were 20-11 going into the Big 12 tournament.
And they were 7-11 in the conference. Kansas State was 6-12.
Right. So what we're going to say here is that if Jerome Tang takes K-State from, what did you say their overall, well, K-State's overall record is what, 14-17?
Yeah.
Okay. And Iowa State's going into the NCAA tournament 20-11. If Jerome Tang next year takes this team from 14-17 to 20-11, that's only a 6-win improvement. And you may say that's only a 6-win improvement. It's the difference between having a coach resign and a coach that's going to get a contract extension because he also won two games in the tournament. Why can't Jerome Tang at K-State next year, that quickly, go to 20-11 and win one or two more games in the conference? Okay, so he might even have a losing record in conference. Let's say he goes 8-10 and his team is 20-11 and they lose in the quarterfinals, Big 12 tournament. They get a 9-10-11 seed and then they pull off an upset in the tournament. And they're in the Sweet 16. If Iowa State can do that in 1 year with a brand new coach, sure, I would hope Jerome Tang could.
Well, and
is that unfair expectation?
Not even close.
Thank you.
Expectation is
be
better
at
than
least
that.
That. Yeah.
No, maybe not in the first year, but that in the first year. But I mean,
that would be a major step forward the first year, though. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
One of the bad things that could happen is next year they go 27-7 or whatever crazy number it is. They finish second in the Big 12 and they make the Elite Eight, and then all of a sudden the expectations will be through the roof. And there's nowhere to go but down.
Like you can even forget what Iowa State does in the tournament this year. You don't even have to worry. Just do what they did in the regular season, make that tournament.
Sure.
And
that's a step in a major direction.
I would think that'd be enough for a lot of fans
to be
in the first year.
To build off
first
it. Right.
2 years.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think first year for sure.
Yeah.
That should be expectation, make the tournament next year, shouldn't it?
It should be the expectation for Kansas State basketball every year, regardless of who the coach is.
Okay.
I mean, that's if you're a program that is serious about the sport, right,
mm-hmm.
your expectation should be minimum NCAA tournament appearance.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't see why he can't be in the tournament next year. No doubt. Now, interesting comments as well. He was asked about the transfer portal.
The national average for transfer is 43%. At Baylor, it was 16%. So, two reasons. We told the truth in recruiting, right? And we loved our guys. Other guys. And they didn't want to go anywhere else. So, that's what I'm going to do. Tell the truth in recruiting, and then we're going to love our guys.
Well, we'll see if that works at K-State. We shall see. Time will tell. But I like the philosophy.
Baylor definitely is a team that got more in than left, for sure.
No
as
doubt.
As far as transfer portal was concerned.
No doubt. Of course, they also had a lot of success here the last few years, more so than K-State.
Yeah, it makes it easier.
That's exactly right. And then Tang on his approach to name, image, and likeness.
I believe that student athletes should be able to take advantage of the opportunity to make money off of their name, their image, their likeness. To stop a young man or to steal his identity and not allow him to profit from it, that's wrong. And so I'm all about that. The thing is, though, that in the sport we play of basketball, all these guys, they want to play professionally and get to the NBA. All right, that's the dream, right? So an NBA contract, right, if you're a first-round draft pick, can be anywhere from $23 million to, you know, $9 million, right? The best NIL deal last year, and this is in football, is maybe $1.5 million. That's like pennies to dollars. So instead of chasing the pennies, we're going to be in the gym so we can chase the dollars, right? Because it doesn't make any sense to make a few dollars in college and not get a chance to reach your dreams. You need to be pursuing your dreams. We'll do everything we can to help in that aspect, but the focus has got to be on the basketball and on being the best player that you can be and then winning the most games as a team, because 80% of young men who are drafted, they get drafted because they played in the NCAA tournament.
He's done his homework. He knows what he's talking about. Yeah. I mean, this is a guy that's no slouch. He just wings it. I don't know how else you can be but impressed with what he did yesterday and what he said. We've got one more thing coming from him about his relationship with Scott Drew and Baylor that I thought was very interesting coming up in a moment. Now, when you're a head coach, you can't do it by yourself. You need to have a good staff around you.
Yep.
He's already putting together what seems to be a pretty decent staff. I don't know how to fully pronounce his name. Ulrich Malagai, maybe. He's an assistant coach with Texas on Chris Beard's staff. And remember, he put together a great staff, Chris Beard. And he's 37 years old, and he is leaving. He was with Texas Tech with Chris Beard. He went to Texas, and now he's going to Kansas State. So that seems to be, he's a really good recruiter. And that's, I mean, as Bob Huggins said before, it really isn't about the X's and O's. It's about the Jimmys and the Joes. He and other coaches have said this. So you got to have talent. You can be a great coach, and you can, you know, have a team overachieve, but you still need that talent to really win championships. There's no question about it. And now North Texas assistant coach Jareem Dowling is set to join the staff as well. He's been assistant coach at North Texas. Not sure exactly how old he is, but Tang officiated his wedding because Tang is a pastor of some sort. Is that right? Or was?
Yeah.
He obviously has where he can officiate a wedding. That means he can make it official, obviously.
Yeah.
That's interesting, too. So the staff coming together, some think that Shane Southwell has a chance to still be on the staff, but now he's already got two of his top assistants lined up. So we'll see what happens there. And then this, I'm going to close with this with Jerome Tang. And, you know, I remember the years, and I was one of those people, where, Scott Drew, nice guy, whatever, always loses to KU. Can't do this, can't do that. Of course, what happened last year, you know, won a national championship. And he's becoming more and more respected after, I think, for years he probably wasn't. And Jerome Tang was on his staff for quite some time. And here's Jerome Tang talking about a bottle of wine and how Scott Drew helped him celebrate getting the job at K-State. You know, that's one thing that's really impressive to me. Bill Self's done it before with coaches that have left him, is that in this coaching fraternity, you lose a guy on your staff, you have to have the confidence to know you can replace him, and you have to also have the confidence that if I end up meeting him down the line and he steals all my good information, I can still beat him. And I think if you're insecure, you're kind of not going to come out and say, well, I tried to get him a job. I love the guy, and I'm so happy for him. I mean, Scott Drew said nothing but good things about Jerome Tang. In fact, he said he'll be cheering for K-State in every game, except, of course, when they play Baylor.
Yeah.
You know, and you could say that's coach speak, whatever. But I think they truly do. I mean, when you work together for almost two decades closely, and the success they had at Baylor and what they built when it was a train wreck after the murder within the program and took over in 2003 – there's a bond there. There's a sense of family. And I think that's something that could really help Kansas State as well. This is very interesting. Jerome Tang talking about Scott Drew and how they celebrated.
When Coach found out I got the job, he came over that night. And he brought with him a bottle of wine that someone had given him in 2003 when he took the job at Baylor. And they told him, I want you to drink this when you want to celebrate something that's really, really great. Well, we won an NIT championship. We won, went to Sweet 16s, went to two Elite Eights, went to a Final Four in a national championship, then won the Big 12 again, and that bottle was still closed. Job, he came over with his wife to open that with me. See, those kind of ties, those deep bonds that take colleagues to become friends and then to become brothers for life, that's what we're going to do here. I plan to be at your weddings. I plan to send you something for your when your first son or daughter is born. I will have the picture up in my refrigerator and in my office. The kind of bonds that are not broken when you change colors. The kind of bonds that are not broken by distance or time. And Scott Drew. He's a terrific man, but I expect you students to give him a hard time when they come here.
Love the guy, man, but when we're playing against each other, we're going to be cutthroat. We're going to win. I thought that was a really cool story.
Absolutely. And everybody aspires to maybe have that kind of relationship probably as a head coach to somebody you can lean on. And then now, yeah, I mean, you want to see the people that you love and the people that you support get the opportunity like Jerome Tang has right now. And I know that Scott Drew is probably pretty genuine in all of that. And the fact that, and Jerome Tang is too, and his genuine appreciation of Scott Drew to get him to this position. Mm-hmm. So it all goes hand in hand.
Well, we'll see how it plays out.
Yep.
Usually most fan bases, for the most part, are excited about a new coach, unless you were a K-State fan when Frank Martin left, and then you never gave Bruce Weber a chance. There wasn't nearly as much excitement around Bruce Weber as there is around Jerome Tang.
I'm excited to be in Bramlage Coliseum next season. I'm ready right now. We got to get through football for K-State first, you know.
No, and I think K-State football should be pretty good next year with Adrian Martinez. You should be excited about that. You should be excited about the men's team and their coach, and you should be excited about the women's program.
Absolutely.
They could do some great things
all
next year.
All the basketball in Bramlage Coliseum is what I meant.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and every last bit of it.
And honestly, I mean, you look at even the University of Kansas, of course, you always got men's basketball to be excited about. Women's basketball made the tournament and won a game. And a football team, they beat Texas. And they're going in the right direction. There's more reason to be optimistic about almost everything for those three sports I just mentioned for both schools.
Yeah.
Of course, there's always KU men's basketball. You just expect whatever it is.
Yeah.
But K-State, I think football, they'll be improved. I think, obviously, basketball and men's, they'll be improved. And the women should be really good. And KU's turned around in women's basketball. Football, I think, is going the right direction. And of course, they've got Bill Self as well, unless they go on probation or whatever happens if they ever end that investigation. All right, let's shift gears here. We weren't streaming yesterday because we were making changes here in the studio. We're streaming now. We're on the app. I have some people that usually listen to us that were disappointed that they couldn't listen to us when they're outside of the radio listening area. And then we couldn't post the show because our streaming was down, so we couldn't record it, do this, and do that. So people might miss some of the things that we talked about with Tyreek Hill yesterday. I'm not going to repeat everything that we talked about yesterday, but if people are wondering about our takes on it, I think we all three are in agreement that this is the move the Chiefs needed to make. It was the best option for them. They weren't going to pay Tyreek Hill $30 million a year. They weren't going to give him $72 million guaranteed. He's 28 years of age. Yes, he's in the prime of his career. There is some wear and tear on his body. He's not a great wide receiver. And let me now, before everybody starts screaming at me, he's a great receiver, but he's not an actual great receiver of catching the ball. And what I mean by that is he doesn't catch it with his hands. When he tried to, it would go off his hands and get deflected for interceptions we saw this year. Really, the only time he really was good at using his hands in front of him was above him for high jump balls that Mahomes would throw to him. My son talked about all the time watching the Chiefs. He said, Tyreek Hill is a great receiver because he's fast. Now, you have to catch the ball, yes, before you can run the ball for a touchdown. But he would always catch it with his stomach, with his chest. That's not how the great receivers catch the ball.
No.
But in fairness, you don't have to do it all the exact same way. Tyreek Hill is one of the top receivers in the game. He is a unique animal. There's nobody in the NFL that I know of that can take some of the plays he does and turn them into 10 yards, into 70 yards, and a touchdown. Just see the Bills game in the playoffs. And that's why Chiefs fans are freaking out, because we don't have that home run hitter anymore. Tyreek Hill, let me see if I can find it, because I think I retweeted it, but maybe I didn't. Looking here, maybe I didn't. But he basically said yesterday at his conference with the Dolphins, it was the money.
Yeah.
It was the money.
He comes at you with a lot of money,
You change gears.
Right. Yeah.
Which, listen, I don't, you know, this is the thing I see some Chiefs fans say. First of all, there's Chiefs fans that are freaking out because Tyreek Hill was traded. Why, we should have given him the money. We got to keep him. We got to do this, blah, 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 blah. And I disagree. Secondly, there are people that say, well, it's Tyreek Hill's fault. We shouldn't be blaming the organization for not, you know, doing this or that. He had a big offer on the table, and he should care about winning. And so, you know, that's on Tyreek Hill. He apparently doesn't want to play for a winner. And they basically, you know, put him down because he went out and got the best contract he possibly could. And I'm like, anybody out there that is going to put down a person that got their best contract they possibly could, really apparently does, then apparently you don't care about ever getting a really good deal at your job. You apparently have no intention of getting a raise or a promotion. You're happy, be lucky, working for a winning business. And if they don't give you a raise or if they don't give you what you asked for, you'll be like, ah, okay. And you'll just go back to your chair and you'll do what you did for all these years. If that's the way you are, then I guess you're not being hypocritical.
Yeah.
But most people ascend to do, you know, either get paid more eventually or take more responsibilities and get paid for that or whatever. You want to get promotions in certain ways or whatever. But the bottom line is, how do you give a guy a hard time when he could go get a long-term deal? He can get $72 million guaranteed. He can be the highest paid receiver in the game. And by the way, his last contract was below market value because of things that happened off the field that we then found out, you know, Chiefs fans wanted him cut at that time. Some didn't even want him to be drafted. And the Chiefs turned a fifth-round pick in 2016 into five picks in 6 years of productivity, or 5 years, and a Super Bowl ring and another Super Bowl appearance and six AFC West titles and four straight AFC Conference title games. I'd say they got a pretty good run out of that fifth-round pick, wouldn't you?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So Tyreek Hill has on a rookie deal, which was obviously not a ton. Then he got a second contract, which was below market value because of the news breaking with his issues that became public, of course, with his fiance, girlfriend, whatever, and the kid, and the family issues that they had. And then that all got taken care of, so forth and so on. And the Chiefs stuck by him. The Chiefs gave him a chance. They stuck by him. And people go, well, you know, the Chiefs gave him a chance. They gave him his first chance. They stuck by him. What about loyalty? Listen, if Tyreek Hill blew out his knee and is not the same player, you think the Chiefs are going to keep him on the roster for 5 years and pay him a lot of money? No. So why is Tyreek Hill don't have to have loyalty towards the Chiefs? Neither do the Chiefs have to have loyalty to Tyreek Hill. That's why it's called a business. And Tyreek Hill, once the Chiefs knew they weren't going to pay him the amount that he was going to get on the market when Devontae Adams got $28 million a year with the Raiders, and that, if you want to blame anybody, blame the Raiders, okay, for the market going up. So Hill then, of course, is saying, listen, I'm just as good as Devontae Adams or close to it. I should get just as much money. That's what his agent says. Of course he should. Look at the numbers, the whole, you know, screenshot presentation to everybody saying, listen, this is clear. He's one of the top five receivers in football. He's a unique guy. Nobody can do what Tyreek Hill does. He brings a whole different dimension to your offense. He can take you next level. So you know what? He wants at least $30 million a year or $27 million a year. And the Chiefs are like, well, we offered you 21, 22, 25, whatever. We can't go with that many years. We can't go that much guaranteed. You know what? Why don't you and your agent go explore trade possibilities? That's exactly what happened, and it happened quickly. So then Drew Rosenhaus gets a hold of the Jets and the Dolphins, and they're kind of bidding against each other. And there was a lot of talk about how the Jets, oh, yeah, the Chiefs are crazy. They took the Dolphins off for five draft picks and taking three picks from the Jets, and the Jets' 10th overall pick. The Jets never offered the 10th overall pick. They didn't. They offered no first-round pick at all. And so yesterday, Tyreek Hill was asked, well, was it close? Because the Chiefs were saying, basically, if pretty much things were even, they let Tyreek pick where he wanted to go, Miami or New York. And they asked yesterday, well, how close was it to the Jets, you know, and if it really came down? And he's like, oh, man, it was Miami all the time. Well, of course it is. Warm weather, beaches, you don't have the media scrutiny of New York. And by the way, maybe that could be a bad thing for Tyreek, getting distracted off the field and on the beaches or who knows what happens. But he basically made it sound like it was the Dolphins all along. So the Chiefs get the draft capital. And now they got to replace Tyreek Hill. One guy is not going to replace Tyreek Hill. We talked about it yesterday. But the Chiefs did go get a receiver. So life begins after Tyreek Hill yesterday. And I think a lot of Chiefs fans have finally come. I've noticed a lot of Chiefs fans, I know this is a crazy concept, to maybe wait a little while before making comments on social media? Like, maybe let it resonate, let it sink in, and try to think something through before immediately putting your opinion all over social media. Like, it's okay to wait 24 hours and chill a little bit. You know why coaches tell you, parents, not to bother them right after a game, but wait till the next day to maybe talk to you about your kid's playing time or something? It's because you're in the heat of the moment. The adrenaline is flowing, this, this, and this. Same way with fans. You get all caught up in, oh, dear Lord, all these teams are signing these great players, and we're getting rid of our playmaker, Tyreek Hill. What is going on? We must not want to win. Our Super Bowl window is closed. Oh, dear Lord. I'm so mad that we lost that title game against the Bengals and we lost to the Buccaneers. How are we going to move on? And you freak out, and you never really studied the actual situation. Now, late last night, and then, of course, into this morning, I've seen some of those people that are freaking out now actually starting to understand it because they actually took the time to figure it out. They go, oh, okay, 5 draft picks for Tyreek Hill is a better deal than the Packers got for Devontae Adams. Oh, we could trade some of those picks and move up to get maybe a stud receiver. Oh, we can get Marquise Valdes-Scantling, who runs a 4.37 40, and we can still have speed. Oh, I forgot we had Mecole Hardman, who runs a 4.44 40. Oh, I forgot we have Travis Kelce, the best tight end in football. Oh, I don't know how it slipped my mind. I forgot Patrick Mahomes is still our quarterback. And so you sleep on it, you wake up, you're like, well, maybe that's not that bad of a deal. We don't tie up all this money in one guy. Oh, you know, he did have a few injuries here and there and so forth and so on. And you come back down to earth. Well, why not just save yourself a lot of aggravation, chill out, or actually do some homework and look through it a little bit? Because last I checked, one player doesn't make a team. You need a whole bunch of players. And what we're seeing in the NCAA tournament, most of the All-Americans, first-team All-Americans in the NCAA tournament already are out. Ochai's the only one left. They're out. The top player, Mantrin, is out now with Arizona, a go-to player. Kentucky. Oscar's out. A lot of All-American guys, these star
the
players.
Kids from Iowa and Wisconsin.
They're out.
They're fading my mind.
Johnny Jones
right now.
Wisconsin. Or Davis. They're gone. So it takes more than just one player. Obviously, one player has a big impact, especially at quarterback in the NFL. That's why the quarterback position is paid the most, because it is the most important position in the football in the NFL, especially when you pass it more than you run it. That's the way the league is. So why in the world would you be, for the people that are all about so mad Tyreek Hill got traded, you're telling me that we should have gave him $72 million guaranteed at the age of 28. You're telling me that we should give him a 4-year deal. You're telling me that we pay him an average of $30 million a year while we have Chris Jones on a fat contract. And yes, that was a mistake, and we said it before it happened. But it is a fact. He's still on the team, and he counts against the cap. And, oh, yeah, you got Patrick Mahomes' number going up and up and up, which is still going to look like a discount in a couple years. You can't pay everybody at the top of their positions. And this is happens. This is the price of being successful. The price of being successful is you lose some of your assistant coaches typically to other teams because, hey, they're the hot new commodity. You got to restructure, retool your coaching staff. Andy Reid's done this many times. The same thing happens with your team. A lot of people don't understand that when the Super Bowl, when the Chiefs won it all 3 years ago, that there's a lot of guys that aren't on this team anymore. Like, people don't understand how quickly the turnover happens for NFL teams. It happens every year. There's turnover. In fact, usually every year there's at least 15 or 20 different guys on your team from a team that went to the Super Bowl the year before. It happens a lot. Now, the Chiefs, the rare thing they had a few years ago, 21 of their 22 starters are back, and we said maybe that was a bad thing because you get fat and happy, you got your ring, so forth and so on. I'm excited about where things are going with the Chiefs, and I might be in the minority, but part of trying to be a dynasty, and I don't think the Chiefs are a dynasty yet, but I will say, they have won four straight, or they've been to 4 AFC title games in a row. Mahomes has never not been to the AFC title game. They've been to 2 Super Bowls in that period of time. Should have been 3, and if D4's not offsides, maybe 4. They're still in a window where they can win, and I hear the Super Bowl window is closed. Why is it closed? Well, we lost one player. Last I knew, unless we lose Patrick Mahomes, let me tell you something. Unless Patrick Mahomes has a career-ending injury, or a season-ending injury, the window closes for that year, season-ending. Career-ending, okay, the window's closed. But as long as 15 is your quarterback, and on top of that, Andy Reid is your head coach, your window's still open. I don't care if the Chiefs trade Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill. Your window is still open. Do you have as good a chance to win a Super Bowl? No. but your window is open. Do you really think the Chiefs are going to fall to where they go 7-10 and not make the playoffs this year? There's some people, actually, media hacks that are putting that the Chiefs are going to finish fourth and last in the AFC West after winning six straight division titles. Okay, first of all, why put out your predictions now? Because they haven't even had the draft yet. The Chiefs have 12 picks. They've got now a lot of money freed to go sign other players to help their team. And the Chiefs, no. Marquise Valdez-Scantling is not going to replace Tyreek Hill. You know who he replaces? Byron Pringle. Or maybe D-Rob slash Pringle. He does not replace Tyreek Hill. Nobody does. Nobody will. But if you can improve your defense with some good draft picks, or you get a pass rusher or two, and you find a receiver in the draft, or you maybe go trade for a Tyler Lockett, which I doubt, or maybe you just find another free agent receiver that is going to fit, because the Chiefs already got a couple, Juju Smith-Schuster, and now they got Marquise Valdez-Scantling from the Packers. The Chiefs have tons of flexibility financially to get some pieces to help their team. And so while the Chiefs may not be as glamorous offensively without Tyreek Hill, they might not be as sexy on offense, they might not even score as many points. If your defense ends up getting better because of this trade, and you still have Mahomes and Kelsey and Juju Smith-Schuster and Hardman, those are all still legitimate weapons, by the way. And Hilaire's a weapon, I think, too, when he's healthy. You got plenty of guys that can make plays, and you got a coach that's very good at adjusting because he went to four conference titles in a row without Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill in Philadelphia. So he's won with different personnel and different people. He's had success with really great wide receivers and some not so great that he made great. Okay? I mean, he's turned some guys that weren't great wide receivers into outstanding receivers because of his schemes and getting them open and play calling and this and that. You don't think he can do this without one guy called Tyreek Hill? Listen, I could see freaking out if you lose everybody around Mahomes. I mean everybody.
Yeah.
And it's just Mahomes standing. And he's making $200 million of your $220 million on the cap, and you got to grab guys off the street. Okay, I'd still say your window might now be closed because I think Mahomes is so good. But you have to look at this and say, we can fill so many needs that we might not be able to replace Tyreek Hill completely. But if we can be significantly better on defense, and we come down a little bit on offense, aren't we a better team overall and more balanced?
Yeah.
Which means your window's not only is it open, there's a better chance you can win the Super Bowl, maybe being more balanced. And maybe Tyreek Hill isn't going to just throw one up for grabs for Tyreek Hill and double coverage in a overtime of AFC title game, believing a guy's going to make an incredible play because he don't have that guy. Maybe he's going to make the smarter play because, hey, now I don't have two security blankets. I have just one, and that's Kelsey, and I can spread around to other guys. Maybe this is a blessing in disguise. But instead, Chiefs fans immediately just think the sky is falling just because one guy left this team. Before Tyreek Hill got here, the Chiefs won AFC West without him. They won. They had home field advantage, or at least a home playoff game with Alex Smith. I mean, this team went 11-5, and there was no Tyreek Hill here. You know, I don't think Chiefs football started when Tyreek Hill was drafted. They had lots of success before that with Marty Schottenheimer and then Andy Reid, and it's called change. It's called retooling, and the Chiefs are not rebuilding. They're retooling, and I personally am excited and just absolutely fascinated by what the Chiefs are going to do this offseason in regards to draft, free agency, if they're going to make trades, because just going with the same group year in and year out, eventually they're going to get old. They're eventually going to have to get paid, and then you got to make tough decisions. And that's the price that the Patriots had to pay, the Cowboys had to pay, 49ers had to pay, any team that's been good. The Seahawks have paid it. Remember, they should have won two Super Bowls in a row if they actually ran the ball with Marshawn Lynch. Yeah. And you see now that thing's falling apart completely. They even traded Russell Wilson, for crying out loud. The Chiefs are never going to let it be that bad.
No, they're not at all. Human beings, we're built as emotional beings, right? So when something like that happens, you respond quickly to it, and you don't like it. Like even when you know something's coming, right? Mm-hmm. I was an insane Carlos Beltran fan when he played with the Royals.
Sure, me too.
And Zach Greinke as well, right? Mm-hmm. And it was just gut wrenching to see those guys get traded. But you knew that it was going to happen.
You were prepared.
You knew that they weren't going to re-sign with you. You know, this is their last hurrah with your squad. The difference with Tyreek Hill is you didn't know, right?
It surprised everybody.
It surprised everybody in the morning. So that even makes it more like I can understand and put the tweet out when Greinke leaves, happy for Zach. You know, knew he wasn't going to be back. Glad he's going to go to a team that might have success, or even Carlos Beltran back then when he did too, and he did have success immediately when he got traded. And so, you know, had that postseason success. But the difference here is my reaction is not to be like, oh, best of luck to Tyreek Hill in Miami, right? Mm-hmm. Your reaction is, oh, man, what do we do now without that speed and that guy on our team? That's right. Your gut, sure. Quick reaction. To where, you know, sometimes the emotions, those quick emotions are going to be, we weren't going to have him anyway, so best of luck to that guy as he leaves. And that can be, you know, with anything, with athletes, with your coaches, you know, if you didn't see it coming or whatever, or you did see it coming and you're like, oh, I'm happy that he got a job. Like if Bienemy would actually ever leave, right? Mm-hmm. Happy you got a job. Good luck, Eric, wherever you go, mm-hmm. because you're expecting that. But this emotion comes right and bubbles up real fast and has to explode somewhere.
Sure. Absolutely.
And that's it. Twitter, Facebook, wherever you want to put it.
Well, KU fans are freaking out when Roy Williams left for North Carolina.
Yeah.
And I'd say his replacements turned out to – actually, life has been better after Roy Williams.
Yeah.
It was good during Roy Williams' era, but it actually, honestly, has been a lot better. And of course, after some eras, it goes south, like, you know, fire Frank Solich after winning 9 games, and or even Bo Pelini. And, oh, hey, what do we got? We're 3-9. We can't even win a winning season. But it is emotional. It's knee-jerk reaction as well. And I think you hit the nail on the head. How quickly it happened is what really caught people off guard. But they got a haul, man. I've talked to Dolphin fans. I've got, well, two Dolphin fans. They're both named Todd. One's in Nebraska, and one lives, of course, Todd Clover. And they both think they're big Dolphin fans, and they think they gave up way too much. And Chiefs fans are whining and complaining about they didn't get enough. What did you expect? Like, I think most people expected them to get higher than the 29th pick.
That's the hang-up. I don't think it's the number of picks. Right. I think it's where we got the first round pick.
But people get caught up in that, and they don't think about, well, we can combine picks and trade up to get to number 10, maybe, if you want a guy, and you get that same pick the Jets had. Who knows? But people get caught up in that first-round pick. There's no guarantee your first-round pick is going to be a stud either.
Well, I think the main thing was to try to just get Tyreek off the books. I mean, you're going to get something for him, obviously. Now, obviously you want close to as number one as you can, but that's just not reasonable.
Well, it depends on what offers are out there.
People aren't offering it. You can't take it.
Yeah.
So I think they did fine getting late first round. The main thing is they just weren't going to pay Tyreek Hill that money. And if you look at his stats, you got some years that are – his yards per catch are 14,
they're down.
15. It's 11. Mm-hmm. Now, give credit to Tyreek for trying to adjust a little bit and being a little bit different player. But a lot of that's the defenses that the Chiefs are seeing. They weren't going to let Tyreek do that.
Mm-hmm.
So now the Chiefs are saying, all right, well, we'll lean into this.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll build a deeper, more even wide receiver room. Now, if you're going to play that way, all right, but we got a counter to that. And then, you know, these guys can still run. I mean,
but you still have speed.
I mean, all these wide receivers can run.
Yes.
So if you take one bad half step as a defensive back,
mm-hmm.
all these guys can get behind you. So that's the way the Chiefs are going to do this now.
Well, so let's talk about life after Tyreek, okay? So Tyreek's gone. He's going to the Dolphins. Once again, I think it's a great trade depending on who they get with these draft picks and what they do.
Yeah.
I mean, if the Chiefs Super Bowl, I believe, and I think we all agree, that the Chiefs extended their Super Bowl window longer instead of it closing. I disagree with people and media people saying, oh, the door is closed and on Super Bowl and they won't be back for a couple of years. No. They've set themselves up to be longer window of winning a Super Bowl. And you look, and I saw somebody actually post what I said yesterday, is that you look down the line with this organization, and you look what's happening in the conference. And I mentioned this yesterday for people that don't get the stream. We're rehashing this a little bit. Mahomes got paid, and he's going to be a discount 2 years from now. He already looks like a discount in some ways. Josh Allen got paid. All right, they're going to deal with bigger numbers there, and that's the Bills, maybe their biggest challenge in AFC. Cleveland just gave Deshaun Watson $230 million guaranteed. All right, so the Browns, although I don't think they're a gigantic threat in the AFC right now, but maybe they are. Okay, that's going to come back eventually, catch up to them. And you know why I say this? Because all these people tell me that Mahomes' contract is going to catch up to the Chiefs, that he takes up too much of the salary cap this year or in the future. It's going to come back and bite them. Well, guess what? If everybody else has bigger numbers that bite them 2 years from now, Mahomes is actually going to be probably the third highest paid quarterback in his division 2 years from now. Mm-hmm. All right, Russell Wilson's 33. Here's the point I'm trying to make. The Chiefs are zigging while everybody else is zagging. And AFC West, Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert are going to get the big, 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 big contracts here in a year or two. And then they're going to be hamstrung a little bit and have to be creative. What the Chiefs did here was they got rid of an asset and got a fairly good price in return for that asset. And then they can spin that into other assets, and they can build around a quarterback. And B, they don't have to slack off at all. They might take a mini step back. They might not win the division, but still make the playoffs. And if you're in the tournament, anything can happen. And believe it or not, you can win on the road in the playoffs. We saw it this year. You don't have to have home field advantage. That doesn't guarantee anything. Chiefs fans should have learned that way before the Mahomes era. Okay?
Yeah.
So to me, and I told my oldest son this last night, And mark the tape. And this is when I'll brag if I'm right. Okay? And I could be wrong. But sometimes I'm wrong, sometimes I'm right. And we played back the tape when there were people actually freaking out that Alex Smith was being traded and Mahomes was going to be the quarterback. Oh, he's the number one rated quarterback in the league. How do we get rid of Alex Smith? I'm like, because you know that's the ceiling. You're never going to make a Super Bowl with Alex Smith your quarterback. Nice guy. That's super awesome. He's a game manager. You've got to try something different. And I said, listen, you give the keys to Mahomes. And if you take a step back and, you know, he has rookie year, he throws 20 picks and whatever. But long term, the Chiefs are going to be better off. And then who could have imagined and predicted he'd go for 5,000 yards, 50 touchdowns, and go to the AFC title game and a D Ford's offside penalty from going to the Super Bowl his first year? Guess what? That all worked out, right? Because here's the thing that people get scared about. It's the unknown. We know the known. Well, I know Alex Smith. He's nice and safe. He's a blanket. Yeah, that's great. But do you want to win the whole thing or just be good? Do you want to be great or do you want to be good? Okay, well, we got to have Tyreek Hill back. Well, we're really good with Tyreek Hill. But you know what? We could be good longer without him. Because Tyreek Hill is going to break down eventually. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. And once if he has an ACL or a major injury with one of his legs, his speed ain't going to be what it once was. He suddenly loses that extra step that he has in the rest of the league. But this is my prediction. I predicted then that the Chiefs will win a Super Bowl with Patrick Mahomes. I said then the Chiefs would be a better team with Patrick Mahomes, and the Chiefs had no choice but to move on from Alex Smith. And then people were questioning me on that, and I said, well, we'll see. I might be wrong. And now all those people don't even remember who Alex Smith is. And they got Mahomes jerseys they're wearing left and right. Okay, here's my prediction. And the Chiefs zigged while other teams zagged, didn't they? They traded up 17 picks to get Mahomes, and nobody expected it. Nobody expected them to trade Tyreek Hill the other day, did they?
No.
But they have a plan. And here's the thing. 2 years from now, here's my prediction. 2 years from now, we're going to look back on the Tyreek Hill trade, and we're going to go, that move allowed the Chiefs to win a couple more Super Bowls or get to a couple more Super Bowls. And we're going to look back on that trade and we're going to say, wow, remember when the Raiders spent all this money on a Crosby extension and Chandler Jones and they gave Derek Carr an extension, which is in the works, it sounds like, which I think is crazy. And you remember when the Chargers they were all almighty. We got Khalil Mack and we got Bosa, which already signed. We got an $82 million corner we signed. And oh, remember that before they had to give Herbert the huge $283 million deal? Remember when Russell Wilson at the age of 33 was traded to the Broncos and they took on his money, had to give up a lot of draft picks and do this and do that? And what did the Chiefs do that year? They actually traded away a star while everybody else was adding stars. And that money will come back and bite those teams eventually as well. And so my prediction 2 years from now is we're going to look back on this move by Brett Veach and we're going to say, that guy was ahead of the curve. The Chiefs were ahead of the curve just like they were when they traded up to get Patrick Mahomes. They are ahead of the curve. They own the West. And I think they're going to win. I think they're going to win the AFC West again this year. I do.
Yeah.
I don't think it'd be amazing if they do. Some people have said that. I think it's crazy. Of course they can win the AFC West. Now, Mahomes gets hurt. Now things are all off. I think 2 years from now, we're going to look back on this trade and go, it's one of the best moves the Chiefs made.
Yeah. Might regard it like a Zach Greinke trade. Right?
Yes, you know? Right.
And you know, at that point, we didn't know anything about those guys that were coming from Milwaukee.
Yep.
But
Kane, Escobar.
Obviously, the Zach Greinke trade won us a World Series, in essence. Right?
Got us to two.
It put you to the point where you were that good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it didn't happen overnight, but, like, football's going to go a little quicker because there's not development with these guys that are already pros, right? And so, you know, the draft picks that you get probably typically are going to develop a little faster than that blockbuster Major League Baseball trade, unless you're picking up Bryce Harper or something like that, obviously. But you know, that's the thing is you can look back at these, and there's a lot of history on trades where you can look back where a star got traded, but the other team definitely benefited from it and got the better deal and just moved forward. Dallas Cowboys are an example of that.
Just because you don't know all the names of the talent that's coming in doesn't mean they're not going to be stars.
Yeah.
And I think a good example of the analogy you're making here with the Royals traded Zach Greinke in the prime of his career, and he didn't really want to be there anymore. They traded him, and what did they get in return? They filled needs. A center fielder, Lorenzo Cain.
Yep.
Shortstop, Aristides Escobar, all right? And then Jake Odorizzi was part of that deal, and then they spun him into the get Wade Davis, James Shields for Tampa. That trade triggered all the success for the Royals. The difference, of course, is the Royals weren't having a lot of success prior to that trade, whereas the Chiefs are already pretty good. But let's compare it. Tyreek Hill, obviously, if he really wanted to be in KC, he wouldn't have left. So he took the money, and he left. Zach Greinke wanted to go play for a winner, so the Royals traded and got guys' needs. They were trade offers for him, and they picked out the one that best fit what they needed to fill, their needs. That's what the Chiefs are going to do here. What are their needs? Like, we were going through the needs last night, my oldest son and I, and on offense, I don't think they have any. Like, people keep focusing on wide receiver. Yeah, they probably need another receiver, but it could be a young guy they draft. It could be a bargain bin free agent guy, because right now you've got your best tight end of football. Your number one receiver it's going to be a receiver by committee right now, but Juju Smith-Schuster is a solid receiver. Marquise Valdez-Scantling, we're going to talk more about him in a moment. He's a solid receiver. You got Mecole Hardman coming off his best year of his career, and he has a chance to really shine. And he's going into a contract year, by the way, so he's going to be motivated. Okay, so receiver, yeah, they're going to probably add somebody. Do they need a superstar wide receiver for them to be successful this year? I don't think so. Offensive line is pretty solid and set. Running backs, they're set that they could use a second. Derek Gore will be back up as a backup right now, but they'll probably, more on that in a moment. They've got a plan at running back. Don't worry about running back. Quarterback, they're set. Even a backup quarterback. Defensively, their safeties are set. They got the safety from Chicago, the Bush kid. He's your third safety. They got Thornhill, and they picked up Justin Reed, who's only 25, 3 years, $31 million, outstanding player for Houston. So safety's not a need. Their needs are on defense. Almost all their needs are on defense. They need, obviously, a corner, a place to Arvarius Ward. Clearly, they need a corner. Yeah. They definitely need pass rushers, and they probably need another linebacker. You can fill some of those needs with these draft picks, just like the Royals filled needs for center fielder and shortstop with getting rid of or trading Zach Greinke. The Chiefs then also, with the financial cap flexibility, can go fill other needs as well that they couldn't, signing Tyreek Hill to a gigantic deal. So here's Marquise Valdez-Scantling. Played with Aaron Rodgers. He's headed to the Chiefs. 3-year, $30 million deal could be worth up to $36 million in incentives. Before you freak out about that and say that's too much money, 2 years, $18 million is basically the contract. The third year is an option, okay? Valdez-Scantling is 27. Tyreek Hill is 28. I'm not going to try to tell you Tyreek Hill is a worse receiver than Scantling. That's not where I'm going with this. I just want to compare. Scantling is 27. Tyreek Hill is 28. Scantling averaged 17.5 yards per catch. Is that right? Over his four seasons so far in the NFL. Last year, he missed six games due to injury. The year before, he played 16 games. He caught 26 passes for 430 and three touchdowns in 11 games. His best year was in 2020. He had 33 catches for almost 700 yards and six touchdowns. Now remember, he wasn't number one or number two at wide receiver for Aaron Rodgers. We know he forced the ball a lot and threw the ball to Adams a ton. He has over 2,100 yards receiving in his four seasons with the Packers. A couple things here. First of all, he has 13 TVs, so he can score touchdowns. He has 4.37 speed. Okay?
Yeah.
That's not much slower than Tyreek Hill. And here's a big thing. Patrick Mahomes has not had a tall wideout to throw to since he's been in Kansas City. I'm talking actual wide receiver. Josh Gordon is maybe, he could be that guy.
That actually is in the lineup catching balls.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
He's now going to have a guy that's 6'5", that has a 4.37 40. He's never had the combination of size and speed that he now has with Scantling. I mean, Tyreek Hill is 5'10".
Yeah.
So, this could be a great signing by the Chiefs. Then again, it could fall flat on their face. Who knows? But you see what the Chiefs are doing here. We still got now two guys in a row run sub 4.4. Hardman, and Scantling. So we still got speed in more than one position. We got a possession receiver, a guy, it could be a security blanket, tight end, Kelsey. And we got Juju, who can be a possession receiver. Yeah. So we've got two possession receivers and two speedsters. That's not a bad combination.
Yeah.
And here's what the Chiefs are also working on right now, and it's not official yet, but Ronald Jones, who's only 25, who's had injury issues in Tampa Bay, he is visiting the Chiefs, and they believe that the Chiefs, and there are many that believe the Chiefs are going to sign Ronald Jones. Listen, if that kid's healthy, he might be better than Clyde Edwards-Helaire, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a better running back. So, in regards to running the ball, complete back, I don't know. So, they're okay there if they do that. So, that solves your running back situation. And Gore could be your third back. And then they are talking to Jermaine Carter Jr., Carolina Panther linebacker, who's a free agent. And he had 88 tackles last year. So, that could be your third linebacker, okay? And now they're talking to a defensive end from the Niners. And I believe he's only 25. I don't know how old he is for sure. I have to look it up. Arden Key. And he had 6.5 sacks last year. Now, granted, maybe he got 6.5 sacks because of the guys around him. You see how you can go get some pieces at a cheaper rate and fill more needs instead of giving all the money to a 5'10 wide receiver who's had a great career in Kansas City? You see why the Chiefs had to move on or should have moved on, and they did? You can do so much more with all the extra money and the draft picks. And that's why I think it's so fascinating, all the pieces that Brett Veach can move around.
Yeah.
To really, really, honestly, let's be honest, this Chiefs team really hasn't been balanced since Mahomes became the quarterback. This team could be more balanced. How about being in the top 15 in defense easily, and your offense still top 10 to 15? The Chiefs are going to play differently from the standpoint of they're still going to score points. They're going to still have big plays. They just might not score as quickly as they used to, but they weren't doing that last year anyway. And as Jason pointed out, Tyreek Hill was taken away to where he averaged 12 yards a catch. So he wasn't getting nearly as many of those big plays anymore. So
yeah,
Andy,
everybody's yards per reception were down last year for the Chiefs.
Because
pretty much everybody.
They made you throw it underneath.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay? And so the Chiefs would be like, okay, we got all kinds of guys that can beat you underneath now. And that might open up the deep ball, too. And here's the other thing. A deep ball, you can have two guys all over. Scantling, at 6'5", he's got a better chance to go grab it than Tyreek Hill does.
And listen, Juju's only 6'1", but he's shown the ability to do those kind of things, too, right, if he can be healthy and focused on what he's doing. As a guy that has the vertical leap, right, 6'1", compared to whatever Tyreek is, 5'7". I don't know what he's listed at, but
Tyreek's 5'10", I believe.
5'10". I think he's listed higher than he actually is.
Well, he ain't 6 foot, I can tell you that for sure.
For sure. Yeah, he's definitely 5'10", or probably shorter than that. So, but yeah, Juju's a guy that can do that too, and kind of get the ball downfield and go up for him. And so those aren't things that only one guy can do, is basically what we're saying. And some of them can do it at a better rate and have a better percentage of making catches because they're taller, they have the height, and Mahomes can put that even in an even different spot than what he can with Tyreek Hill, because Tyreek's using all that based on vertical to go up and get that. And so now you've got an opportunity to use all those things to your advantage.
Scantling runs a 4.37 and Tyreek Hill a 4.29. Tyreek Hill, 5'10", 185. Scantling is 6'4". I don't know how much he weighs. I don't have the weight here. He's 27. Hill's 28. And the other thing I noticed what the Chiefs are going after, they're not going after, you know, the Raiders went after 32-year-old Khalil Mack and 31-year-old Chandler Jones, okay? Or excuse me, the Chargers got 32-year-old Khalil Mack, Chandler Jones. The Broncos got 33-year-old Russell Wilson. You know where I'm going with this. Look at what the Chiefs are doing. The guys they're targeting and bringing in, Justin Reed, 25. All right? They brought Austin Ryder back, and he's still in his 20s. Ronald Jones, 25, who they're targeting as a backup running back from Tampa Bay, 25. Arden Key, the guy I said they're bringing in for a visit, defensive end, 6.5 sacks for the Niners last year, 25. See where this is going?
Yeah.
Jermaine Carter, linebacker, 88 tackles last year. Not a bad linebacker from what I understand, 27. The Chiefs right now are actually, I think it's brilliant, and this is going to speed up the process of a retool, in my opinion. They now have cap space. They now have flexibility with draft picks, but they are also getting younger. They're going to be younger. Instead of 30-year-old Tyrann Mathieu afraid to actually lay the wood on somebody because he's in a contract year, you have 25-year-old Justin Reed at the early part of his prime. You see how that works?
Yeah.
And the other thing, too, is Brad Veach has had some pretty doggone good trades. Remember Charvarius Ward for Parker Inger?
Yeah.
That was a pretty good trade. And the Chiefs have drafted pretty well. Not well all the time, but last year was very good. You get two offensive lineman starters and a rookie of the year candidate on defense, and Nick Bolton. I mean, a year prior to that, Willie Gay in the second round. The Chiefs have had some really good draft picks. Ladarius Sneed in the fourth round. So when people freak out, well, we didn't get three first-round picks, or we didn't get the 10th overall pick, which was not even offered anyway, Brad Veach has shown that he can go get some pretty good talent.
Yep.
And now guess what that means? Those guys are on rookie deals, and then that don't hurt you against the cap. And then, honestly, in a couple years, you might have to restructure Mahomes' contract, and you're in position to do that too.
Yep. Yeah.
And keep him happy.
All in the right spot.
I think it's brilliant, personally. I think it's brilliant as long as they pull off the plan. That's the key.
Yeah.
You know, if they go out and draft a whole bunch of players that don't perform, then it's going to look stupid.
Yeah. Don't end up with Jonathan Baldwin or something like that. You know, it's like, you know, with your first-round pick here, you know, one of them.
And by the way, if Tyreek Hill goes to Miami, and I can see this happening. Tyreek Hill this year in Miami, 60 catches, 820 yards, and he has 6 touchdowns. Now, that's not a bad year. But for what he's making, that's a horrible year, right? Yeah. And people are immediately probably going to say, without watching the games, because this is what I predict, well, Tyreek Hill, you know, see, he's a declining player. The Chiefs made the right move. He's a declining player. And I'll be like, well, they made the right move, but he might not be a declining player. It's just that, oh, yeah, they don't have a guy that can throw it deep when he's open. I don't think Tua has as strong an arm as Mahomes. I could be wrong. But, and oh, yeah, when Tyreek, he hits him in stride, Mahomes could do that, and Tua maybe can't. So that'll be the easy next narrative to shift everything and start being, oh, Tyreek, aha, ha-ha, Tyreek, you made a mistake. You went to Miami and see, now you're not as good, blah, blah, blah. Well, maybe he's not as good simply because he doesn't have Mahomes or Andy Reid, or maybe he is a declining player. No, just because he goes down statistically with Miami, if that happens, that doesn't mean he's declining. It could be. But it's people don't understand sometimes it ain't about one guy. Yes, Mahomes, the quarterback, is very, very important. But one guy doesn't cost you, I think, a Super Bowl window unless it's the quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's what it comes down to with the majority of teams that have that window. They have that window because of who their quarterback is.
That's right. Tom Brady. Why do the Patriots have their windows? Because they had Tom Brady. So there's kind of a wrap on what people might have missed. I know we went a little bit long, but it's been a weird week, and I want to make sure people get caught up on some of that stuff, and we'll see what the Chiefs do. And Andy Reid has had a history of making receivers better than they really are, just like Tom Brady has done as a quarterback.
And to your point of getting younger, that's an Andy Reid scheme or policy anyway. He, you know, there are times he has stuck with guys a little too long in the past, but Not so much with the Chiefs. He did it a couple times with the Eagles. But also, there are times when he just says, let's just, you know, he almost purges you at 30 and brings in those 25-year-olds.
Which is
guys.
The way they probably
which
do
is
it.
NFL, you know.
That's where you're at right now.
Where you're at. Now, he'll make exceptions for the quarterback if he feels the quarterback is worth doing that for. But, you don't stick around much after 30 on an Andy Reid team for the most part.
And that's the way you need to do it because I know it's an NBA team, but how's the over 30 Laker team doing? not well. By the way, the draft next year will be in Kansas City.
Yep.
That's pretty cool. I thought that was a joke at first. I thought somebody was messing with me. I'm like, really? Seriously? Kind of like I thought it was a joke Tyreek Hill got traded away. And we end with the Royals. Listen, if you're a Chiefs fan, I think you should be excited about the potential to make all these moves and improve the defense and make it a better all-around team. I think as Royals fans, you should be excited, if nothing else, for Bobby Witt Jr. Yesterday, turned heads again in spring training. They were down 3-1. He hit a 3-run shot in the fourth inning. Royals won 5-4. They're 5-0 in spring training. I told you guys, you know, I messed up on my NCAA turn bracket horribly, badly. Every team I picked to win it all just... Okay, but you got to admit, I'm on to something here. The Royals will never lose another game for Bobby Witt's career. Bobby Witt Jr. will never lose a game as a Royal.
162-0
this year, and they're going to follow it up with 162-0 next year. They're not going to lose in spring training. Are you kidding me? They're just goofing around right now. They're 5-0 in spring training, and Witt is 5-for-10 at the plate. And we're talking Bobby Witt Jr., not Whit Merrifield, although Whit Merrifield's a pretty good player. Dude, that guy could be the face of Major League Baseball. Think about this for a second.
Oh, for sure.
Think about this for a second. All those years that us Kansas City Royals and Chiefs fans have suffered through all the agony and disappointment, right? Being Royals being horrible for so many years, and the Chiefs always find a way to choke. A year from now or 2 years from now, it might be sooner, the face of Major League Baseball and the face of the National Football League reside in the same city as my two favorite professional sports teams and yours as well, Dusty, and I don't know about Jason's. Can you imagine? And oh yeah, by the way, the one that's the face of the NFL owns part of the organization that Witt Jr. could be the face of a Major League Baseball, which makes it even more intriguing. Can you imagine? This is the thing I've always said for a long time. What would happen if the Chiefs and Royals were kick-ass awesome for 2 years in a row at the same time? Because there's once in a blue moon they might both be pretty good 1 year, but usually when the Royals are really good, the Chiefs disappoint somehow, some way. Like they were good record-wise when the Royals won the World Series in 15, but they flamed out in the playoffs, and there was always the bitter disappointment. But the Royals, you never got your hopes up too high with the Royals because they just sucked. They just weren't any good. But then they got good, and you had the Chiefs, and you're like, well, at least I had the Royals because they were good this year. The Chiefs, they disappointed me in the playoffs. When the Chiefs are really bad, that's usually when the Royals would have a better season, okay?
Yeah.
And 03 was an example. Well, actually, that might have been the year where the Royals started 9-0 and the Chiefs started 9-0, I think, with Vermeil.
Yeah.
But what I'm trying to say is that usually the Chiefs and Royals don't line up to where they're both really, really good at the same time. Now you could have the faces of two professional sports leagues right there in Kansas City.
Yeah.
It's going to be harder to get a ticket now.
Yeah, the problem with the face of Kansas, the face of Major League Baseball being in Kansas City, is they don't promote their athletes
as well
like the NFL does. Yeah. So that's the concern I have with Bobby Witt. Mm-hmm. He could be the face of what people understand about baseball, right?
Right.
But to get that name out there, hopefully maybe some of this new stuff in the CBA will get somebody else charged up about something other than status quo, because they need to promote their athletes.
Well, I think he's a superstar in the making. I think he's a superstar in the making.
He's got the tools. There's no doubt.
Folks, you want to see Bobby Witt Jr.? I can't guarantee you he'll play because he might get hurt. I don't know. But it's a possibility. You could see him play, and you could go with us to watch him play. May 22nd, Royals bus trip. Give us a call, and we can give you more information. 545-3220. Have a great day.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.